I'm Erica Earlbeck, and this is the So You Talk to Cows podcast, a podcast for agricultural communicators. My guest in this episode has had her fair share of talking to all sorts of crops and livestock. Cindy Cunningham is an agricultural communicator that I have looked up to since I started working in the industry several years ago. She is the model of an agricultural communicator, a true professional, but also Cindy is incredibly kind, a wonderful role model, and someone that everyone working in the agcom industry respects and looks up to. I'm so proud to have her on the podcast. So Cindy, let's start with your history and what you're doing now.
I'm currently the managing supervisor of agriculture public relations for a marketing and advertising company called Woodruff. Our clients are agriculture and nature. We love working with our ag clients and helping them to promote themselves and their products and their brands to their audiences, be it farmers or ranchers or others who are involved in the crop protection side of agriculture. It's been a super fun job. I've been there a little over 2 years. Prior to that, I was with the pork industry, National Pork Board, and National Pork Producers Council for about 28 years, serving as their assistant vice president of communications, working on media relations and crisis management for the U.S. pork industry. Very exciting time. I also was a farm director at KICD Radio in Spencer, Iowa, early in my career. And my first job out of college was working for Post Newsweek, who owned the cable station in Sioux City, Iowa, and they were trying to do a pilot of a local version of CNN. That didn't work so well, but it was a great experience and a great opportunity that opened doors and gave me skills that I've used throughout all of my career. Graduated from South Dakota State University, agriculture communications degree, and grew up on a farm in Northwest Iowa that I am still actively engaged in with my family.
Awesome. Cool. So I know that one of the things that you do and have done for a long time is train spokespeople. So what are the key takeaways that you offer to your training without giving away all of your secrets? But, you know, what are some things that you would tell people, especially when we're training with a crisis in mind? What are some key things that you would tell people to do?
I think the most important thing is to know and understand your message and your audience. Who are you delivering that message to? And to practice. We often think, practice, I know the messages, I know how to deliver this message. But even running through it and practicing it once or twice really helps you to be able to deliver that message, especially if you have to be on camera or if you're in a situation that is really intense, like a crisis situation would be. And knowing that you can keep calm and deliver that message, because the people who are hearing your message need to know that someone who is calm has control of the situation and is able to help move us through that situation and get us back to a more normal time.
Okay. When you host crisis drills, and one of the ones that I still talk about that one that we did at NAFB, where we had the toys on the table and it was a foot and mouth disease drill. Like, that was one of the coolest drills I've ever seen or been part of. But yeah, how do you go about setting those up and executing those? What does success look like when you do those drills? Yeah, just tell us more about that.
I think the whole point of the drill is to make sure that everybody knows and understands their role, but also to identify those things that may play out in a real life situation that you haven't planned for and how you're going to deal with those. So if you can make your drill super realistic, the one you talked about with the toys and the, it was a foot and mouth disease outbreak, and we used beef, dairy, and the pork industry all as having involvement in that disease and in that drill, the more realistic you can make it, the easier it is for everybody to understand and to build on and to see their role. So it's kind of like a fire drill. When you're a youngster, you start having fire drills in school. And the longer that you move through school, the more comfortable you become with knowing what happens when that alarm sounds. A drill is the same way for a crisis plan. You've thought through that crisis plan. You may have talked through that crisis plan. You think you know your role. But as soon as that alarm rings and we're into that drill, it really does make a difference. If you have had a realistic drill and been able to identify maybe where there's a gap or maybe where you've got too many resources and you can reshuffle those into a different area, just practice and experience is really what is going to help you in a real life crisis. And that drill gives you that in a safe zone. So you can make mistakes or you can test out, hey, what if we did this? What if we did that? And the drill that you referenced, Erica, was really cool because we had every farm kid's dream. We had every farm toy that you could think of, and we set it up as if it was an area in the country, and we made it as realistic as possible with roads and schools and towns and crops and other livestock in the area. And then we had this disease outbreak happen in one specific farm. And then we had to figure out how to move livestock and move people around and move grain around and other aspects of it. And being able to literally pick those toys up and move them as if you were in real life just makes it so real, and it's intense, and those drills almost feel at the end of the day as if you've been through a real situation.
I'm going to go off script here, but what are some other scenarios that you all have done drills on with or without the toys? And yeah, sometimes those toys are kind of distracting because I can't remember the guy's name, but he's like, please stop playing with the tractors. So yeah, sometimes it's better to not have the toys on the table, especially for people that need to have a toy in their hand all the time, like me. So
it actually drills, we don't have to have the toys to have drills. We just have to have situations and scenarios. So ahead of it, if you're hosting a drill or if you're participating in a drill, what's going to happen ahead of time, you should know the plan and you should know your role and your responsibility in that response or in that plan. And then the person who's hosting that drill is probably going to set out two or three different elevations of that crisis. Mm-hmm. So we'll start with just a normal day. And then, you get a phone call from a media. And then the next elevation is, and now there's a rumor out about whatever the situation is. And then the next elevation out is, potentially a disease has been confirmed in this area. So what are you going to do in that situation? And then you can start throwing in more elevations that are creative and that are what you would expect to happen. But the best is when you can throw in those elevations that are not what you would expect. So you can also plan for those too. There are certain things that you know are going to happen, and that it's often the things that you haven't planned for that can throw you off.
So you had mentioned one of the scenarios is getting calls from the media. Talk about the importance of media relationships, and especially when we're working in the ag world, the relationships with ag media.
Yeah, media relations is critical. I can't stress that enough. The ag media are amazing because they know and understand us, but they also know and understand us. So they're going to have a depth of knowledge that is different and far exceeds general media who only report on agriculture once in a while. But there is also, you will also be working with media who are not fluent in agriculture, if you will. And so you'll need to know the difference and need to know how to make sure that they understand that message that you're trying to deliver, because again, you're delivering it through them to their audience. So their audience may need some additional help in understanding it as well. But media relations as a whole is a lifelong and career-long opportunity for you. If you can build those relationships with reporters all the way through your career, it makes it a lot easier when there's something happening to be able to pick up the phone or shoot a quick email and say, hey, this is going on and I think it's a good story for you. Can we get you to cover this and help us tell this story? That doesn't just happen because you send a well-drafted email. That happens because you have that relationship and you've developed that over time. And that's a lot easier to do with agriculture because we have such great opportunities through NAFB and the Ag Media Summit and just opportunities to interact with our media. But you also need to find ways to do that with media outside of agriculture, with whatever your target audience is, and help them. And if you can, you know, potentially take somebody on a field tour. I took a reporter to a soybean field this spring. She'd never been to a soybean field before and had a couple of our experts along, agronomist experts along, and it worked out really well. And since then, she's been able to use that information in other stories too. So that's relationship building. She'll always remember, hey, that one lady who helped me get into a bean field. It sounds pretty simple, but it is something that reporters remember forever. So give them an opportunity, help them tell their story, because that is going to help you tell your story.
I know you're a very active member of NAFB. What other organizations are you in? Because that's something that I really encourage of people, is to get involved in some of these, but maybe there's one that I'm missing. So are there any others outside of NAFB, LPC, Ag Editors?
Yeah, so National Association of Farm Broadcasting. I am a 30-plus year member of that organization, both as a broadcaster and now as the Allied Council. Have served as president of the Allied Council a couple times. I cannot say enough about the importance and the value of the NAFB meeting and the relationships that you can build there. Other organizations, the Livestock Publications Council. I also served as president of LPC a few years ago. And again, you think of that more as the print media, NAFB, obviously more the broadcast media, Ag Publications Summit, Ag Media Summit is where the Livestock Publications Council, American Ag Editors Association, they all meet together at that. So it is more the print folks, but it's interesting because we all do it all now. It really isn't print versus broadcast. It's ag media. And I think that's definitely interesting. And then National Agri-Marketers Association, NAMA, very active in NAMA as well. And that's a good opportunity to kind of look at things from a little bit different perspective, from the PR side, as opposed to just the reporter or the marketing communication side. Those are the primary organizations that I'm a part of, but find what works for you and get involved and get active. Often it's said, it's not what we know, it's who we know. I think we need to know our stuff, but I also think we need to be involved and know other people who are in our community as well. And that's, you know, you never know when you're going to be looking for your next job or when you're going to be looking for someone to come join your team. And that's where those leads come from as well.
So thinking back on your career, what was the worst or scariest, most stressful crisis that you dealt with? And then how did you handle it?
In the pork industry, we had a lot of crises throughout the time that I was there. I think probably one of the worst was, and this is going to go way back in time, so I'll also have one with a little bit newer time frame. But in 1998, we had what was called the hog crisis, and prices went down to 8 cents or $8 a hog, and it basically wiped out a whole group of pork producers across the country. And I think that was probably one of the worst things that I've been involved in, basically because it was so emotional to us too. We were trying to help these farmers literally save their farms. And it was something that we weren't able to control, and we weren't necessarily able to fix it Like some situations, you may be able to, like a disease, you may be able to fix the situation. In this case, we really ended up working to provide the tools that that these pork producers needed, these farmers needed to move through this time and to get back to where the market would rebound. And the other major one that really stands out to me was what is now known as H1N1, but at the time the media were calling it swine flu. And at the time when it started, it really didn't have anything to do with pigs, but it definitely was calling into question the safety of pork. And that definitely was an opportunity to put all of our resources to, and all of our planning, all of our crisis planning into action. It lasted about 9 months that we were in crisis mode. So a sprint and a marathon all at the same time.
That's exhausting. How did y'all, and the pork crisis too, like that went on for, what was it, a year or longer than that even?
Yeah, no, it had ramifications that are still, the way the pork industry is structured today has a lot to do with what happened in 1998. You know, you kind of have to, it's kind of like a fireman. We see them run into the fire. And you kind of have to, if you're going to be in crisis management, you kind of have to have that mentality that I'm going to be here and do what needs to be done until we reach a time period that everything is good again. And you kind of, in a weird kind of way, it's exhilarating to be able to be involved and to try to help. But it also is exhausting. And there are times when you need to step away and say, yep, I need to catch my breath for a minute and make sure that I'm good so I can help others. Like this is kind of a weird analogy, but when you fly, they say, you know, put your mask on yourself first, so then you can help others with their mask. And crisis management is kind of the same way. You need to make sure that you're taking care of yourself so that you can carry out the response plan and help others.
Yeah. That's I can't imagine doing a months long crisis. So yeah. So good job. Just to kind of, as we wrap up, give us a few tips for new agricultural communicators. And I'm thinking about the person that's a one person communications department. What are some tips that you would give to those people that are developing their crisis plan?
Yeah, I think as you develop your crisis plan, always have that scenario in the back of your head. Sometimes as you're writing that plan, it's easiest to bump it up against an actual scenario. So maybe even start with the scenario, if this were to happen, boom, 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 and then build your plan on, okay, so this happened, how are we going to fix it? And we always build our plans to the worst case scenario. And then you can always scale back your plan if the situation that you're facing isn't as intense as what you build your plan to. Those things that are in the back of your mind, we always joke about what keeps you up at night. Make sure that you include that in your plan. And really, nothing is off limits in your plan. If you have that gut feeling or that instinct that, hey, this may happen, then figure out what you would do if that did happen. Because there's a reason that instinct or gut is telling you to think about that. It seems like, you know, the things that you don't want to have happen in a crisis response are the things that usually do happen. So plan for them in advance, and then you'll be able to move through that situation.
Anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I think it's just crisis management and crisis response and crisis planning is exciting. I know that sounds a little warped when you think about all the intensity of it, but at the bottom line, we all want to help people. And that's really what crisis management is all about, is how can we help people get through what may be the worst time of their life and provide an industry or provide people or provide you know, the brand, the tools to manage through this situation so that they can come out on the other side. The goal of any good crisis plan is to return to business as usual as quickly as possible. So let's think about that as we're building our plans. Yeah, it may be intense when you're in the middle of it, but when you get to the other side and look back and it's like, wow, we were able to save that brand, or we were able to move this issue out of the way of where we're trying to head, or we're able to move us around an issue and get on with doing business.
And I think that's the perfect positive way to end this episode. Thank you so much to Cindy Cunningham, the Public Relations Managing Supervisor at Woodruff. Thanks for listening today. I'm Erica Earlbeck. I'm the producer of So You Talk to Cows. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe. Also, my textbook is available now, The Crisis Communications Guide for Agriculture, Food, and Natural Resources. The link to purchase is in the show notes.